Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sha la 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 la. Take it away, Tess. Step to the left. Step to the right.
Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people's show. Come on to the premiere show. SmackDown.
It is the 6th of April in the year of our Lord 2000. Melanie C featuring Lisa Left Eyes Lopez. Never Be the Same Again. The one that goes, it's just the beginning, it's not the end. Things will never be the same again. Yeah, that's number one.
Don't sing it too well, otherwise we'll get demonetized.
Oh, well, that is a concern whether I sing these. Lake Placid beats the 7-week run of Toy Story 2 at number one in the UK box office, making it not only the Kevin Nash of films, but also my new favourite alligator film of all time. Nintendo sells its 100 millionth Game Boy / Game Boy Color handheld console. No surprise there, even my dog had one. Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace is released on VHS, so you can use the rewind feature to figure out Otto's gamble and if it actually makes any sense whatsoever. B-Sky-B is the first interactive TV advert. It's an advert for the cooking sauce Chicken Tonight. Viewers are offered the option of clicking the red button to visit Sky's interactive TV service Open, where they can order a money off voucher and a recipe book. There was a young man named Matthew who inexplicably watched the wrong episode of SmackDown last week. The April 13th episode. Got all excited. Didn't even notice that they weren't even discussing the biggest pay-per-view of the year that had just happened a few days earlier. And just thought it was poor booking. And because of that, there are some questions tonight. Why was last week's SmackDown Classic Raw SmackDown review cancelled? Has Matthew watched the correct episode of SmackDown? Is he even awake? All the questions and answers and many, many more stupid jokes can be found here at the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review with possibly Matthew, but definitely Tom. Let's check. Is he there?
It is definitely Tom.
It's definitely Tom. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I wasn't going to mention the flub up from last week. I was just going to say that we were preempted by the Westminster Dog Show podcast.
Oh.
I was going to let you off the hook, but you're and also, right? So yeah, so we missed a week. Get over yourselves. We're here now. And also, you know, Open, Matthew.
Oh, I love that we're talking about this. Yes,
right.
I do know. I remember the blue screen.
Open was amazing. So Open was the first time, and it was back in the year 2000 when we had basically online shopping through our television. There's two things that I remember doing through Open. That was buying Super Smash Brothers for the Nintendo 64. Mm. But my mum used her credit card to buy it through the television, and we were like, how is this going to work? How long is this going to take? It was mind-blowing. And also, Beehive Bedlam.
Beehive Bedlam. God.
Dropping that on you. That was amazing. So it was
sometimes
like a column sort of Puyo Pop-style game featuring bumblebees on Open.
That's right. It was a complete knockoff of Buster Move. It was fantastic. Sometimes it was free and sometimes it wasn't.
Oh, man. That's put me in the best frame of mind talking about Open. But all is good at this end, Matthew Gregg. We've had a nice unexpected week off the podcast. We're back now. Get over it. And we're all good at this end. Like, no... I'm trying to think of anything groundbreaking and earth-shaking has happened since we last spoke. I know that we've met up, like, in real life, IRL, with several feet apart, and been for a beer out in a pub and sat in a garden of a pub and had a beer. That was exciting. That felt normal.
Yeah.
Big fan of that, mate. Big fan of that. More of that, please. How are you, more importantly, Matthew?
I'm still running off the positive vibes of our last meeting. Gotta tell you. In a good frame of mind, to break up the not me, because, yes, people are able to see people more and more. However, the people that I know, I like, can't be arsed still. So I'm very thankful for people, not just Tom, for the work that we do here at Cultaholic, but for being a lovely guy to meet up with and just talk about crap.
Well, it's just nice to be at a point where we can get out and see each other again and see people again. It's nice. It's still not back to normal, admittedly. But you know what? If wearing a bit of cloth on my face means that I can go and have a coffee for a bit, I'm fine with that. I don't have an issue with that. Before we get into the rigors of SmackDown this week, my friend, which I can tell that you're champing at the bit to do. It's apparently champing, not chomping. Who knew? Do you want a little rundown?
Is it?
Yeah, apparently.
No. Whoa.
Champing at the bit. It's champing at the bit, not chomping at the bit.
It's not chomping.
No.
Oh.
So, basically, I used chomping at the bit on a video months ago, and multiple people corrected me. And apparently it comes from horses. One definition of champ is to bite or chew noisily. These are senses meant in the idiom champing at the bit, which refers to the tendency of some horses to chew on the bit when impatient or eager. It is figurative. In its figurative sense, it means to show impatience while delayed. But apparently, the way you're meant to say it is champing at the bit rather than chomping at the bit. Yeah, I know. But
you ever see Lord of War?
No.
Nicolas Cage is the warlord there. He says, I'm Lord of War. And he goes, warlord. He goes, thank you, but I prefer it my way. That's all I'm saying to that. So go on, Tom. I can tell you, champing at the bit, what was in the news this week in the world of wrestling.
You are metaphorically biting on a metal mouthpiece used for controlling a horse. So I'll run down some of the elements of the wrestling world for this particular week. Now, Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff, they are going to be steering the good ship WCW. And Vince Russo appeared on WCW Live on the 28th of March. Now, this is an interview that has gone down in somewhat infamy for the sheer amount of, what's the word I'm reaching for? Bollocks that Vince Russo spits during this interview. So according to Vince, during his interview on WCW Live, Bill Bush told him the company wanted to focus less on ratings and entertainment and more on wrestling. And Russo just went, I don't agree, bro. In fact, I think we should make Tank Abbott the world champion at the sold-out pay-per-view. This led to Vince Russo taking some time away from the company. He claimed that he had boosted ratings whilst he was there in 12 weeks, when in fact he hadn't. He claimed he wanted to bring Bischoff back in to write for TV, but nobody else liked him, and the idea to everybody was undermining him. He was upset that everybody was undermining him on the writing team. That bit was true. He claimed that WWF turned it around in the ratings the moment that DX went to the WCW arena with a rocket launcher. He said that was the moment where WWF started to win. He said that WCW will now go after WWF, and that number two should throw rocks and stones at number one. He wants Thunder to be moved back to Thursday to go head-to-head with SmackDown, because Thunder's storming it in the ratings. Right/sarcasm. He said the Scott Steiner unscripted promo, this is the one where he called Ric Flair old, referenced WCW sacking Steve Austin, said WCW sucked. That one that got him suspended, he said it was actually the best interview of the year. So it gives you an idea, even before he started booking, mentally where his head is at. And in the crown jewel of this tirade on WCW Live, Vince Russo says, quote, in all honesty, is there anybody out there that wouldn't love to see Goldberg versus the Ultimate Warrior? Yeah, I know. I'm allergic to his bullshit, too. This was Vince Russo, very much the Alex Jones of wrestling in this interview. Spouts a lot of nonsense, but I mean, hey, I might be wrong. Matthew, Goldberg versus Warrior, yes or no?
Well, we already had Warrior versus Hogan, and it was an unmitigated disaster. So, you know what? Yeah, Warrior versus a guy with an eighth of the experience and ring style savvy as Hogan. Yeah, that would be great. You know what? I would like it in a guilty pleasure way, but for WCW to go, you know what? I think we've got too many old blokes who are really hard to deal with at the top of the card. Let's bring in the Warrior is the best. I'll say this, though. All that was classic Russo, but the Steiner promo probably was the promo of the month slash year for WCW, so I'll give him that.
Incredible. It was quite the word. Staying with WCW, we've already referenced changing rooms on this podcast. I'm going to throw another British TV institution at you. I'm going to throw in Watchdog. Matthew, can you explain to our American audience what Watchdog's all about?
Oh, Watchdog was a consumer show where if you had an issue with an event, a promotion or something, you go on TV and it could be hopefully investigated and a bright light shined on it. And it gave consumers some defense or some way of, like, you know, go up to someone and go, you missold me this. And they go, ah, what are you going to do? They go, I'm going to go Watchdog. You go, uh-oh. It's like a refund, sir. I'm going to have a wild, wild swing in the dark and suggest that this is a wrestling podcast. We're talking about WCW. Did this have anything to do with the European tour that she's been?
It certainly did, my friend. So Watchdog, the millennial edition of cancel culture, did a special on March 31st.
Oh, what?
It was, wasn't it? Because instead of tweeting about how bad some company was, you'd go to Watchdog and get them shut down that way. So 31st of March on BBC One, Watchdog ran a report on the WCW tour due to numerous consumer complaints. Now, the main complaint, which we talked about on the podcast before, but we'll highlight it again, was that Sting and Goldberg were on the posters, but nowhere near the venues. They were even on the tickets. They weren't at the shows. There was complaints about the Harris Twins versus the Mamalukes being the main event for the third night. So many complaints that they are doing a follow-up on the 7th of April, trying to get WCW's side. So they're doing, this is a rarity. Like, Watchdog, so passionate to get to dig deeper into this, they've offered WCW the right of reply. We'll find out next week whether they take them up on that. Also, many newspapers in the UK have covered how bad the WCW tour actually was. It's so funny when you see products like Watchdog and the like, non-wrestling products talking about wrestling. You kind of get this weird, it's the equivalent of seeing, I always find, I don't know whether you're the same, Matthew, when you see something mainstream talking about wrestling, it's the same as seeing your hometown on TV, where it's like, I know that, that's the thing I like. It was like on BBC Two last night, it was the program where the family live in different decades, and they were in the 80s, they were in the 70s on yesterday's one. It's the one that Sarah Cox hosts. And for one of the nights, they watched Big Daddy versus Kendo Nagasaki because wrestling was huge in the mid-70s. So you get that little warm fuzzy, even when it's particularly bad news, which it was for WCW at this point.
Yeah, it would be great if I'm watching Watchdog with my parents and it's like, now we'll talk about WCW. And like, oh, I know that terrible wrestling company.
They're my favourites.
We approached WCW for comments, and it's Vince Russo going, bro, card subject to change. You got swerved.
Hey, and if you think the WCW live show scene is pretty rubbish in the UK at this point, don't fret, because they're buggering it up in America as well. They had half a good idea during this past week. So on the WCW House Show tour in America, Billy Kidman won the Cruiserweight title from the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea on the House Show in Baltimore on the 30th of March. Big pop from the crowd, despite the match being a bit the following day in Pittsburgh, Billy Kidman walked in as champ. They had the match again, but Iaukea won it back. And it felt good to be a part of a historical thing happening on a house show, never referenced on WCW television. There was no reference of Billy Kidman. And it's kind of how it become this sort of phantom title run for Billy Kidman that nobody has ever acknowledged, but it definitely happened.
That's awesome. I think, yes, it would have been last year, Liger held the... No, it wasn't the WCW Cruiserweight title. It was the IWGP Light Heavyweight title. And he lost it to Juventud Guerrera and then won it back. But because the finish involved Juventud Guerrera using something incredibly stereotypical. Oh, that was it. A tequila bottle. New Japan, for years, never referenced this title changed. They did it. They pulled the Billy Kidman. It was like Liger never lost the title to pretend it didn't. And it's only in the last few years when they've done the history of the title video packages that they've gone, actually, you know what? It did happen. Enough times passed. It's just so embarrassing for them, for like, well, these great battles in Japan, El Samurai and Ultimo Dragon. It's like, well, what happened in WCW? Got hit with a bottle of tequila.
It's depressing. It's truly, truly depressing. We've got two more big things to talk about.
Oh, goody.
And they're both good ones. 4th of April, San Antonio, Texas. Shawn Michaels wrestles his Bunny Rabbit Ears final match. It was a bunkhouse brawl against Venom where Michaels put up the TWF title. It was given to him by Just Incredible, who won it 2 weeks before. Venom put up the promotion, so he would win control that he won control of earlier. So basically winner take all, the championship and the company. It was a weapons match, ladders, bins, crutches, cooking sheets, all that stuff. Michaels did one big spot in the match, and when you consider that he hasn't wrestled in a short while at this point, dropping an elbow off the top of a ladder must have been quite the sight to see. Venom got beaten up quite badly in this match. At one point, he handcuffed Shawn Michaels to the top rope and just battered him with a kendo stick until he bled. It was quite a gruesome spot to see. Shooter Schultz comes out for the finish. Suplexed Venom on a table, which didn't break. He did it again, and it didn't break. Somewhere in Newcastle, a teenage Matthew can be heard shouting, "I am the table." Michaels power slammed Venom through the table, which finally broke, hit the sweet chin music, and got the win. Michaels then said that he won control of the promotion, and the first thing he was doing was stripping himself of the TWF title and putting it on the line in a tournament. Shawn Michaels' last wrestling match actually became his first wrestling match in a long while. I don't know whether you ever got a chance to see this.
Yeah, because people have sent me that table a few times because of that stupid video series that I still do. And it's interesting, as you said, it's a man who is clearly not in physical condition to be doing this type of thing, using every gimmick under the sun. And as you said, tables, ladders, every shortcut. It's kind of sad, but kind of interesting in a way, because he came back. You know, if that had been his final match, it's like, ugh. You know, it's like Terry Gordy in IWA Japan. You're just like, what are you doing? But yeah, so now it's an interesting curio. So, and it's, you can tell it's 2000, can't you? I'm putting up the ownership of the company on the line.
Oh, it's so very, very of that era. I love it.
The GM will also be putting up his ownership of it. The assistant GO. Amazing. The arena manager for Darlow FC will also be putting in his, like, oh.
I want to think that happened. I really do. And finally, mate.
Wait a minute. Where was the Watch Dogs episode for HBK? Because he came back.
I believe it happened in 2002, the week after SummerSlam. I paid good money to watch Shawn Michaels' last match. Then he had another match. And then another career. Bastard. Finally, I've saved the best for last.
TWF shirt.
Saved the best for last, mate. Best for last. We have a resurfacing of the British Bulldog. At the March 31st tapings of Stampede Wrestling in Calgary, Harry Smith, at the tender age of 14 years old, pinned T.J. Wilson. This led to a beatdown by Wilson's faction, the Honor Roll, and out comes Davey Boy Smith to make the save. Runs everybody off. Smith was there that night just to watch his son wrestle. And Bruce asked him if he fancied getting involved and doing a run-in. So Bulldog was like, yeah. Bulldog does a run-in. Now, I don't know whether this was Bulldog just going into business for himself. He did the run-in, then announced on the mic he was forming a tag team called the New British Bulldogs with his son. And he was challenging a leader of the Honor Roll, Principal Richard Pound, to a match. Didn't say when. I don't know if the match happened. But we have a Bulldog resurface in Stampede Wrestling.
God, it's weird hearing about Stampede Wrestling being a thing
in
the year 2000.
I genuinely thought it'd
came
gone.
Back. It's like the NWA. It's like, it's back. It's like, it's not. It's not, is it, mate? Who are you trying? No, it's NWA. Look, those three letters. We have Magnum TA headlining next week. But yeah, that's cool to hear. It's funny when you say D.H. Smith being the return of the British Bulldog. Did you see the World of Sport pilot on Christmas time?
I did.
Did a few years ago. And it was you'll know what I'm about to say then. The very end, there he comes out, and there's just the announcer, who's either Alex Shane or Jim Ross or whatever, going, he's back, the British Bulldog's back. And I'm like, whoa, what? Let me put my phone down for a second. What have I missed? The British Bulldog's back. He's like, he's back, the British Bulldog, the Bulldog, the Bull... His son. The Bulldog is back. He's back.
Anyway, that's that. That's the week in wrestling that was. Let's go to Matthew Gregg, or as he is on my sister, Morpheus. And he will talk us through this week's episode of SmackDown at last.
I certainly will. The long anticipated, hope it was worth the build, episode of SmackDown.
Seth Rollins comes out.
Oh, God. Rock challenges Triple H to an eye for an eye match.
Yes!
Last Monday night, which is the Raw after WrestleMania, so you know it's going to be good. The Rock took on the brave Shane McMahon in a match booked by Vince, which, due to the power of editing, ends with The Rock beating up Triple H, making Earl Hebner make a pinfall, and then Lillian Garcia announcing The Rock as the new champ, and then holds the world title up. He's not, but the crowd doesn't care. Because it's the year of our Lord 2000, and you could get away with changing the title that way and still pop a 6.0 rating.
It's so weird, that whole segment and the whole first part of this show, which is The Rock the champion? To which we're all going, no. No, he's not. You know, 20 years on, we're saying to ourselves this week, did Adam Cole really storm off Pat McAfee's show? No. No, he didn't. Why are we all hoodwinked by this? No, he's blatantly not the champion, but I enjoy the fact that everybody's like, is he? We don't know. It's the Wild West these days.
Yeah, see, this is one of these things where I think people get confused, or because they use it to get I couldn't think of a normal word, so I'll just use it. Clickbait. Mm. In these situations, I want to see what's happened, so I want to see what's happened on SmackDown. That's the draw, that's the leading. I don't care if Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee is real or fake, because I've watched it and it was crap. Unless Pat McAfee gives him the Van Patinator or something from one side of the NFL pitch. Oh, God, I don't know what I'm talking about. To the other. Or he hits him with a ball. OJ Simpson, LT, moving on.
Before we go on,
no,
I'd like to...
No, don't point out anything.
I want to tell you that I appreciate how you pronounce Pat McAfee's name as Pat McAfee, like he's antivirus software.
No. God.
Oh, I tell you...
Pat McAfee antivirus.
Got Pat McAfee on my... John! Oh. Pat McAfee antivirus software, thank you.
John can't hear. He's watching next week's SmackDown as well.
Sorry, I interrupted your witty woos.
Oh, no, not the witty woos.
Not the witty woos.
Well, that all I've got is test jokes. Witty wee, witty woo indeed brings us to San Jose, California, and Rikishi Fatu jerking the curtain to an ass-sized pop. He's taking on Chris Benoit for the IC title. Benoit, of course, the champion since WrestleMania 2000, the biggest show of the year, where Kurt Angle lost both of them without getting pinned. Tough Christ.
It is indeed.
No, I wrote down on my note, tough choke. So I thought I would. Thank you, Coffee, for saving my life. Benoit avoids a sit-out butt drop to avoid certain death, but Rikishi is Samoan, so he no-sells the Canadian chops that follow up, and delivers the one-man 3D, which is a very, very impressive move, but I'm surprised that he's still able to do that, given that there's usually some sort of setting where it's like, no, I can do this move, but you can't do it later on. Benoit overcomes the superkick to the back of the head that has no lasting issues to deliver a Northern Lights suplex for the win. And I should point out how amazing a sight it is to see little old Benoit using all four of his shoulders to do that move and pin Rikishi clean as a whistle. And then afterwards, Rikishi gets his heat back after a stink face and a banzai drop. Sore ass for a sore loser. What did you think, Tom?
I thought these two put on a great opener. Like, really lovely chemistry between Benoit and Rikishi. Like, Rikishi is on the bubble here. He's going to float around this sort of mid to upper mid card for a while now. And it's just, this is one of those wins for Benoit that positions him well as the IC champion. Like, a win over a big guy establishes him as somebody that can be anybody, any size. And I thought they worked really well together. Big fan of this opener.
I don't think I've seen anyone do that to Rikishi before, Northern Lights.
No, I don't think I have either. Like, we've seen him get, like, F5s and stuff, but a Northern Lights suplex, which takes a whole different part of your body to do the lifting from. Like, jeez, Benoit was a machine here.
Yeah. Have you seen the clip of Kurt Hennig in WCW giving the Giant a perfect plex?
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah.
Don't mind me. Man, that's something else.
Yeah. Then he kicked out. They get. Speaking of sore losers, here's the McMahons. Here we go. Vince gets the name of the city wrong. Is it San Jose, San Puerto Rico? But he says it doesn't matter, as this whole area will be falling off into the ocean soon anyway. Hey, that's global warming, Vince. Get your old mate God on the phone and get him booked. Vince says despite the vicious rumours about DX not being here, they are. He hopes that rumour won't cause any giant queue for refunds. Sorry, that popped me. We get a replay of what happened on Raw, which is always what you want 5 minutes after a recap, the exact same thing. And Vince claims Rock was such a coward that he couldn't beat Shane, so he dragged another guy he also couldn't beat, Triple H, and had Earl count the pin. And then he tries explaining what's happening, but he has to stop. The entire show grinds to a halt. And I'm not sure if I could say this, so Tom might have to edit it, but this crowd is not happy with Vince. And so they cite a giant Shane's a pussy. Yeah. Which the commentators do not acknowledge or say it word for word. You know, they do the whole, what are they saying, JR? thing. But Vince has to just, you know, stop in his tracks, put the handbrake on and just wait for them to get out of the system. And, God, I forgot when people did that. It wasn't, you know, nowadays where somebody stops and they're like, I'm really good. And then they pause and must stare at them like, now's your time to chant. Chant now. Chant now. Now it's like, no, we're just going to chant while you're talking. And Vince makes Earl Hebner head to the ring, and Earl gets the biggest pop of his career because he made The Rock the champion, I guess. Vince asks Earl, why did you count the 1, 2, 3? And Hebner says, well, because The Rock told me to.
The same reason we all do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because trying to take over the world. And Vince says Earl has impugned the status of WWE officials with this behaviour and threatens to knock him on his ass if he does that again. Then he has Lillian Garcia come out. Lillian Garcia, Bay has a big pop. I'm sure she was only a few months into this, so I'm sure some people are like, oh, yeah, that's that new lass. All right. Mike McGurk. Vince gets creepy and makes her sing. And says, please just sing. I know you're a good singer. Pretend it's just you and me alone. Oh, cool. She strokes her hair. It's very comfortable. But then she belts out, do you know the way to San Jose? It's like, on the way. Is this the way to Amarillo? And the crowd really digs this.
I like the comparison of Do You Know the Way to San Jose to Is This the Way to Amarillo? Fresh off the album, now that's what I call Directions to Places.
Is this the way to San Jose? I asked my friends and they said it was pretty okay.
Imagine if Lillian wasn't paying attention and Vince said, sing Do You Know the Way to San Jose? And she's like, all right, Vince. Sha-la-la-la-la.
The entire crowd. Hey, hey. La-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Shades of pussy. La-la-la.
Lillian leading Michael Cole and Lawler when the day is done.
Yeah, the inexplicably start dancing. It's like the Pied Piper. Damn it, Lillian, stop.
The whole of SmackDown is just the Is This the Way to Amarillo video, but with wrestlers from 2000.
Like everyone comes out DX and The Rock and all. Everyone's suddenly friends again.
Chris Benoit trips over on the treadmill. Chris Benoit, that's right, does the Ronnie Corbett.
Tess is given the mic and he doesn't know the lyrics, so it's quickly taken from him. Sha la la la. It pans out. The entire crowd is like in unison going sha la 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 la. And they're doing the foot stomps as well, which sadly, like the Walls of Jericho, causes the entire stadium to collapse and WF goes out of business for killing 12,000 people. So that's the silly tangents that we like, right?
Go on, Tess, your turn. Sha la 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 la. Ew! No, Tess! Wrong song!
Sha la 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 la. Take it away, Tess. Step to left. Step to right.
Shut up, real stupid.
Criss cross. Someone just punches him in the face. Criss cross. Someone else punches him in the face.
Suck at games. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, man. Tess doing the Casper slide. John, bring that to life somehow. I leave that with you.
God. So yeah, that happened.
All that happened and didn't happen.
Yes. Vince says, thanks for proving my point. Pretty women with a pretty voice can be replaced in an instant, so do that again and you'll only be singing the blues.
It's fine. Sadly, okay. We've got Tess doing the Casper slide, so it's fine.
Yeah. Lily replies by getting on the mic and singing Minnie the Moocher. And Vince says, you better not do the next bit. And the crowd goes, na 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 na. She leaves upset and Vince starts talking about his grapefruits and chains pomegranates.
Oh, of course he does.
So tonight, it's a handicap match versus The Rock. Shane and Vince together again. And in a nice little bit, I hope you notice this as well, Tom. As soon as he announces that, Shane's behind Vince, but the camera can see him and he looks worried. It's like, oh no. And then Vince looks at him and he's like, yeah, yeah, great. Starts doing the dance. Yeah, we'll get him. We get him. And this whole segment reminded me that this is the period of Vince McMahon that I absolutely loved as a kid. And it's so great to rewatch segments of this with you, Tom, and relive them. He's able to sum up the storylines. He's playing a character that's not too overarching or overbearing like the 2006 version where it was a parody of himself. And he's so good at talking crap, but still being kind of mild-mannered that it's so good to watch. It's so happy. I loved everything about this segment. They will explain everything, kill about 10 minutes, and just be very entertaining and drive me nuts. And I also like the bit where he started singing sha-la-la-la-la. But what did you think, Tom? I'm eager to hear.
Very similar to you. I it was one of them where, like, the whole story of this was, is The Rock the champion? Even though it's like, no, he's blatantly not. Like, why is this even in question? And it's just the pop that Hebner gets, where he's like, well, The Rock told me to count three. That's the power of The Rock at this point. The wolf whistles for Lillian Garcia, and the whole thing of pretty women can be replaced does not age well. But as you say, Vince McMahon, well and truly in his pomp here, was a sight to behold at this particular point.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is Vince McMahon is like, I'm the Vince McMahon, damn it. I'm very proud. I'm the owner of this. So anytime anyone gets one up on him, it's like, yeah. Even though Vince is going, what are you idiots talking about? He's not the champ. Why are you celebrating? Rock's the champ.
Rocky,
he's
Rocky,
not.
Rocky, sha-la-la-la-la-la-la. Things that aren't happening. The Rock is champion and Lillian Garcia singing This Is the Way to Amarillo.
Yeah. Vince is there going, stop singing that one song that white people like. And San Jose goes, bum, bum, bum.
Young man.
And Shane's going, it's not even in the lyrics. It's not even in the lyrics. There's nowhere in that song that's there. If you do it again, San Jose, I'd be very mad. Boom, boom, boom.
Good times never been so good.
So good. Test, take it away. Do Hust. No.
Oh, Test, you've ruined it again. Never do karaoke with Test.
I won't. But you know what I will do? Christ.
I don't think you can, mate.
I love it. It's like, don't do karaoke. I won't. But what I will do instead is Castrol GTX. After decades of watching wrestling and this being sponsored, I still don't know what it is, but boy, does it look tasty.
I don't think you're meant to drink it.
I asked the guy.
I think your car's meant to drink it, but I'm not entirely sure.
But your car can drink it as well. That's pretty amazing, Tom.
I think so.
Anyway, it's Jeff's Swanton through the table at WrestleMania 2000. Castrol GTX, it's for your breakfast.
Castrol GTX, it's great on toast.
It's just a kid drinking it. Thumbs up the camera.
Thanks, Mom. Sha-la-la-la-la.
After I drink this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
TNA are here.
Hooray!
And so's Test and Albert. Bum, bum. Yeah, thanks, Test. Sponsored by RC Edge Extreme Cola, Phone Free, and Arizona Jeans, the American equivalent to Geordie Jeans.
It is, isn't it? It is the Geordie Jeans. They're Geordie Jeans from off of America.
Yes, there's only a bunch of things that people know Geordie's for. One's Newcastle United, the other's Newcastle United, and the third is Geordie Jeans. Oh, we wouldn't have it any other way.
No, Michael Cole knows us as a mining town.
Oh. Michael Cole will be dying. Like, any have any last request? Any words to say for this amazing man, this amazing career? He was stationed in Iraq. He covered Desert Storm. He's done wrestling for decades. Amazing career. What have you got to say? And it's just be all these hands going up and going, he called Newcastle a small mining town, just 3 hours drive from London. Why are you here? To make sure he's dead.
It's where Fog on the Tyne came from. And he goes, oh, I know that one. Sha-la-la-la-la.
Christ. And they're taking on the duds. And thanks to the benefits of HD on the network, I can see even in 2000, Devon's forehead was already looking like a prisoner's wall.
It is quite an impressive forehead that Devon has going on.
Yeah. It was just one day you looked at it, like an 06, 07, and went, wait, why is Devon so heavily scarred? Wait, what? All those death matches he was doing in WWE. Bloody hell. Anyway, Test starts the match with a gut-wrench powerbomb and also delivers a big boot to Bubba. Commentators are so enthralled by his actions that they start talking about the rest of the show. Albert takes the Devon headbutt off the top, and I've wondered about this, Tom. Given that Albert gets his name from the Prince Albert, where he had all the tattoos and piercings, why doesn't that move hurt Devon?
That's a really good question.
Because that should be like a chair shot in theory.
Yeah, that should be like headbutting a Samoan. Or Lex Luger's forearm, just to cross the streams of your other podcast.
So the idea of like Prince Albert getting a low blow and then just stopping and like not responding to it and then going, in case you've forgotten, I'm pissed down there. Punch.
Yeah, there's deafening silence from the San Jose crowd, which Albert's used to, but he has to go, no, no, a Prince Albert. And as he's explaining it, someone hits him.
He gets hit with Castrol
GTX. No, kids, put down your Castrol GTX smoothie.
Stop drinking your smoothies.
Look, I'll show you. What do you mean the PTC are protesting again? Anyway, Jerry Lawler has a good line here. He says, haven't you ever heard the term fighting Irish? That came from the McMahons. It goes on a little tangent about how Angus McMahon, Vince's great-great-great-great-granddad, was an Irish fighter. Some of these guys are really good when they're bored. That's how me and you work so well. TNA actually looked credible here against the Duds, which I think is a testament to how good Devon and Bubba are in the ring. 3D to test and a broken nose and N64 controller gets a win for the Duds. And as Trish goes to console test, she tells him, possibly, I'll get you a Game Shark so you can get infinite lives. The Dudleys try to put her through a table, but the Hardys make the save by attacking the Duds, and crowd are not as happy to see the Hardys as they were to see Trish die. What do you think, Tom?
The crowd really want to see Trish go through a table. And here's the thing, right? Like, she hasn't even started, because they will recognise this weird bloodlust that the fans have to see Trish Stratus go through a table. And they will own it. And they'll have Trish taunting Bubba Ray Dudley for the next few weeks about going through a table. But at this point, she wasn't taunting them at all. She got into the ring to check on TNA, who, and by the way, incident I've also written here, is the story with Trish that she wants to manage a crap tag team. Because, like, since they debuted, their record's been pretty awful. It has. Like, they're not winning a lot. And it was when she got into the ring to check up on them. She wasn't antagonising Bubba, but as soon as the crowd sensed that she might go through a table, they were like, go on, sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. And it was like, a bit weird. Bit weird at this point, wrestling fans. You're all weird.
It is a weird thing. Yeah. Where I guess they can write down in the meetings backstage, okay, the Dudleys can put a poor innocent woman through a table, and the crowd will boo them because it's horrible. And then they watch it and they're like, oh, it turns out everything they've been saying about our fans is true. They're cheering. Yay! She's dead.
Maybe we're the problem.
No, it's the bookers who are wrong.
Am I out of touch?
But yeah, you're right. When Trish came to WWE, she had the pick of the litter. It's almost the crap version of the Bam Bam Bigelow storyline from 87, where all these managers were trying to, were basically, like, Heenan and Lou Albano and Jimmy Hart were like, no, I want him, I'll outbid him. But it's in reverse. So it's like, you can have us, you can manage us. Oh, how much for? $5.
It's even worse than that. It's even worse than that, because it's like, hi, I'm Trish. I'm Trish Stratus. I want to manage a tag team. Well, here's all the tag teams. I mean, there's some crap ones here. And then Trish even goes, no, I don't even want the crap ones. I want two crap singles wrestlers. And I want them to be a tag team. And that's my plan. And I will make them a middle-of-the-road tag team.
I tell you what, though. Isn't that fairly sensible if you're a project manager? You take on a project that is doomed to fail. So either it succeeds and you go, wow, you defied all expectations, or B, it fails and everyone goes, well, it's not your fault.
This is wrestling's version of My Fair Lady, isn't it? That's what this is.
Oh,
someone's
God.
Got a bet on with Trish that she can't get Albert to say the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane.
The rain in Spain falls mainly. I miss Boss Man.
John, My Fair Lady, but with Trish, Test and Albert, just to confuse everybody.
Some of these people see in the timeline and go, oh, that's good. I don't know the joke, but that's an amusing image.
Yeah.
And some stuff like that will just make people go, what the hell are they on?
What?
Welcome to Bath Salt Review.
When are we doing the Bath Salt podcast?
Right after I finish off this Castrol GTX.
Oh, get that down, you lad.
Glug, glug, glug.
It's full of vitamins.
Vroom, vroom. Yeah. Kurt Angle is backstage. Sorry. Yeah. Kurt Angle is backstage talking to Scotty Too Hotty. He wants to win the tag team title tonight and wants Hotty to...
He was hearty to twice.
And you start sneezing all over him. And for some reason, Scotty Too Hotty is like, no, dude, that's not cool. But he says, no, even with Grandmaster Sexay out, he won't disrespect the Grandmaster like that. And Scotty Hotty's like, Jesus Christ, this is live. Come on, Angle, get it together.
Angle, stop sneezing.
And said, like I said, so they can edit it out, I'm not going to team up with you, even though my partner is currently injured. I won't disrespect the Grandmaster like that. And he walks off, and Angle's still unsure if he's teaming up with him.
Because so he talks Angle, in like jive, doesn't he? So he's a little bit like, I didn't know what he said. He was very baffled by what Scotty actually said.
Yeah. I have nothing to add there. I just sneezed out all over everything. Taz is here. Woohoo. One-on-one with Perry Saturn. Oh, this should be a thriller in Manila right here. He wants revenge on Perry after he cost him possibly the IC title on Raw after he interfered. However, Perry sneak attacks him as Taz makes his entrance and they brawl to the back. And that's it.
The end. Thanks for coming, lads. Bless you. But, the Tess Saturn match, Taz Saturn rather than Tess. Tess has already been on singing Amarillo. Taz Saturn, this was nothing. This was a nothing match. This was just two blood feuds having a bit of a scuffle and nothing more. See, Taz and Saturn, I genuinely think, if given the time, they can have a belter of like a hardcore match at this point.
It's weird. These two, I would prefer to see them in a non-hardcore match because I appreciate their grappling and stuff. And I don't think they had a big singles match. They had some heat back in... there it was, Perry left for WCW. I think it was 97. Because Taz felt that Perry basically took a lot of his image with him. Like, he took the hood, he took the, like, backstage promos where he's doing his wrist tapes, and he's like, I'm Perry Saturn, beat me if you can, survive if you can, and all this other stuff. So I'm glad they're able to squash the beef. But, yeah, they never had that big singles match, because by the time they got together, they were just like, oh, it's those guys. Big whoop.
Beat me if you can, survive if you can.
It's completely different, Taz. It's completely different. It's like dun 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 dun.
Beat me. There's the slightly more defeatist catchphrase that he came out with at this point, which is beat me if you can, survive if you want.
Beat me if you're good.
there was a very defeatist one he went with, which was beat me if you like, survive if you must.
The ECW was beat me if you can, but please pay me.
Pay me if you can. That was just the Paul Heyman ECW catchphrase. Pay me if you can.
And then in brackets, pay me if you can. Just again, smaller writing. Yeah.
Pay me if you can. Brackets, please pay me if you can.
Anyway.
Yo, Paul, I got something to say to you. Pay me if you can. Duh, 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 duh. Shalala.
I was gonna say, wait a minute, not Sweet Caroline again. Because it was Taz's theme. You ever see, by the way, the footage of the Blue World Order? Meanie and must have been Supernova at that time, doing YMCA at the ECW arena.
And I haven't, no.
I have to dig it out somewhere, but. Like, they did it as a bit like, ha ha ha, but they didn't expect, like, the entire crowd to join in. Like, yay, YMCA, dude! You know, right after they've seen barbed wire, blood and tits, it's like, yeah, young man! So they have to keep the song playing, because it's like, everyone's like, all right, cool, this is awesome, like, visual of everyone. All right, everyone look at that camera. All right, three, why? It's all these mutants just doing the YMCA with Blue Meanie.
They missed the trick and didn't just carry on wrestling whilst the music was playing, a la New Jack. Just kept wrestling with YMCA playing in the background.
He's here. He's here. Crowd's going mad. He's here. Yeah. Dressed like the biker.
Hitting them to
because you know you're not going to mess with him.
Hitting them to the beat with trash cans. Young men.
Bang.
Bang. There's no need to feel down. I said, young men.
Bang.
Take yourself off the ground. This is a very musical episode this week, isn't it?
It is.
I've watched Hamilton too often. I'm in the musical mode.
Oh, still haven't watched it yet, but because my friends say it's great, and I'm like, oh, I'll get around to it.
Oh, you're putting it off then. Until
this is my revenge, because
anymore.
All the people I've told to watch JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and so many of them are, thanks to lockdown, and they're like, wow, it's really good, Matthew. I know it's really good. I told you. And they're like, you should watch Hamilton. I said, that I will in 2022, all right? See how you like it. Anywho, all that palaver brings us to The Rock backstage interview with Kevin Kelly. And I love that The Rock pauses to wait for the Rocky chance to die out before talking. And it's good because me and my brother would chant along with the crowd and watch this on Sky One in the morning. It's like Rocky. Oh. Anyway, tonight, The Rock says a lot of things about kissing monkey anuses and, you know, all the good stuff. But tonight, The Rock will raise the people's hand, Shane will get the back, and Vince will get the front. And they'll both smell la 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 la. Just good stuff here from The Rock.
Great line.
Almost as good as RC Edge Maximum Power Extreme Coca-Cola.
Put that in your car.
you'll drive to the moon.
Drink Castrol GTX. Put RC Edge Cola in your car. I think that's the right way around.
No video's got the car winking at the camera. Anyway, it's the APA helping Crash Holly win back the hardcore title on Raw after WrestleMania. Just resetting the clock here, getting everything back to what it should be after the little miscue at the hardcore battle royal at WrestleMania 2000. Coca-Cola, Cola, extreme, caffeine, for kids. The DX Express arrives. Hey, they're here. Oh, that's a segment. You know who else is here? Head Cheese. Blackman and Snow are here to a big pop. Dude has a sign that says, Head Cheese, he's no Gouda. Oof.
Get in.
Good cheese puns. That's what the show needs. They're taking on Boss Man and Bull. So it's one of the worst matches at WrestleMania versus one of the best.
Before we get into this particular match, had a request on Twitter. And I apologize if it was you that requested this. I have lost the tweet in question. But you know how we did the Viscera tiered list on one of the watch-alongs?
Oh, yes.
Somebody suggested, why don't we do a Bull Buchanan tier list? So we take all the gimmicks of Bull Buchanan and we put them into the appropriate categories, which if we are to go by the Ross Tweddle Gary YouTube system for tiered list, that would mean that we would need to put them into, let me see if I can pull up a tiered list so I know what we're working from. So because Buchanan's had quite a few gimmicks over the years, and I reckon that we can rank them all effectively into the best, lovely, 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 all right, just about bearable, and get in the bin. So
that's easy. I can think of four.
I've got them all here.
Oh.
Okay. So, Lord Humongous. This was I believe this is a Smoky Mountain gimmick, which is Lord Humongous, which was passed around between him and Sid Vicious and Sid Vicious's son.
It was a Memphis gimmick, I believe.
Memphis, I do apologise. Yeah. Not
so many different people played it. Lord Humongous from Mad Max 2, have you seen that?
I have indeed, yeah. So it's a play on that from Memphis Wrestling, but previously played by Bull Buchanan. Where would we put this on the tier list? The best, lovely, 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 all right, just about bearable, or get in the bin?
Just for that promo we cut on the lads with the oil, where he went, just walk away. Or leave it here and walk away. There needs to be no bloodshed. Yeah, that the best.
Okay,
what a performance in Australia.
In you get in the best. Recon.
Can you think of anything that the Truth Commission did other than exist?
Yeah, the jackal once came down from the ceiling.
That was the jackal. Anything that the lads did.
Recon and sniper attacked somebody from the DOA. Kurgan was there. I'm sure Recon and Sniper had a match against each other.
I'm sure they had a match, those wrestlers.
Had a match against each other.
We don't even know for sure if they wrestled.
Okay, we'll put them in the bin. We'll put them in the bin.
Put them in the South African bin.
Okay. The Punisher, Barry Buchanan, which was his gimmick upon his debut in 1995 on the North Georgia Independent Circuit.
Oh, you know what? I had a bunch of North Georgian handheld fan cams because obviously we want that coveted six-star Bull Buchanan Punisher match. I haven't seen them. I can't confirm them. I'm going to have to put this in a don't rightly know.
Okay, I'm going to put it in. I'm going to usurp you, and I'm going to put it in all right because it was good enough to be recruited by Jim Cornette for Smoky Mountain. So, and he was in Cornette's stable, The Militia, which had therefore led on to him becoming Recon.
Oh, that's a very important distinction then. What year did he wrestle for Smoky Mountain?
95.
Oh, forget it. Nah, the last year of Smoky Mountain when Tom, you could have shown up and wrestled.
I might have done.
But... like, Rick Rubin's pulled all the money. He can wrestle if you got Fiverr. Also, he can manage TNA.
Okay, Recon, Truth Commission. USWA 95 to 97. So good in the USWA that it was bumped up to the WWF from 97 to 98. Tag team with his best friend Sniper. Buchanan became an OVW tag champ around this time as well. But in terms of accomplishments in the WWF, none. Where we put in Recon from the Truth Commission.
Well,
the best
he must
ever.
Have had a match. He must have had a match
had
in the militia. So I'd put him above
Sniper.
The Truth Commission.
He might have had one against Sniper.
What a great gimmick, though, if you've got a Sniper as your manager.
Yeah.
It's like, where is he? Oh, he's in like the back, he's in the cheap seats. And then inexplicably, the guy you're wrestling just falls down and like gets pinned and there's this big pool of blood forming. And goes, what could happen? I don't know, but my manager is called Sniper.
You just start wrestling and then suddenly a little red dot appears on your opponent's head.
Like, well, I give up.
About Buchanan wins again by submission. What's that about? Bull Buchanan, as in Big Boss Man's mate, Bull Buchanan. WrestleMania match to his name under that gimmick. The fashion inspiration for the Shield. where do we put Bull Buchanan, Boss Man's mate?
Oh, the better. All Buchanan and no Bull. The best form.
Straight
the purest form of Bull. Just for the fact that he had one of the best matches at WrestleMania 2000. There's three matches you need to see at WrestleMania 2000. The ladder match. Bull Buchanan's doing his leg drop to D'Lo Brown, and I can't think of the other one.
Right to censor Bull Buchanan. So brought in after a brief foray alone, even in the qualifier for the King of the Ring in 2000. One of the biggest King of the Rings ever. He was qualifier, didn't get through. But then he aligned himself with Steven Richards as a founding member of Right to Censor. Where are we putting Bull Buchanan? Right to Censor Bull Buchanan.
Oh.
This is the best tier list ever. Thank you to whoever tweeted this.
Yeah, thanks. I'm having a think here because
Do we say Right to Censor Bull Buchanan is better or worse than Bossman Buchanan?
No. But it was because he won the tag titles.
Exactly. He has a belt to it. So technically, he
But I don't want to say
best.
Anything positive about it because this runs on forever. And it was crap. Well, and to this day, the Godfather refuses to sign any merchandise or photos that have him as the Godfather.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Isn't that bad?
Like the Rock's win on Raw, he just doesn't acknowledge it. No.
All right.
The one below the Bull Buchanan one.
Okay, lovely, lovely, lovely that would be.
All right, the one below that then.
That would be all right.
All right, yeah.
Or just about bearable.
I wouldn't even say that. Okay. Yeah, just about bearable.
All right.
Because we're going to have to watch him soon. On this positive podcast.
Okay. So, just to recap, Lord Humongous is in All Right. Recon is in the bin. Boss Man Buchanan is in the best. Right, the sensible Buchanan is in bearable. Okay. Bo Buchanan. Oh, no, I've missed a few. B-squared. B-squared.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the one I know.
Yeah, B-squared.
I've already seen a few segments, but honestly, I thought he was the reason for John Cena's success for a small period of time. Because John Cena didn't do anything for me when I saw that, but I loved him.
So, do you want to put him in the best?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. On one of his underrated gimmicks.
Okay, nice.
What was his expression? Did you say word?
He said, booyah. His famous phrase, booyah.
John Cena, we need someone whiter than you so you don't look as white. Oh, there we go, Bill Buchanan. Woof.
This time, just to kind of pull a few names together, he was known as B-squared, B2, and Bling Bling Buchanan during this time.
Oh, that's right, that's what B2.
That's what it stood for. So
here he comes, B2, you sunk my battleship.
Now, here, 2003-2007... All Japan Pro Wrestling, Buchanan. Now, during his time in All Japan, he formed a gang with Taka Michinoku, D'Lo Brown, and the Gladiator, aka Mike Awesome. And eventually, he joined up with the group roughly Obsess and Destroy.
Yeah, Rod, because they couldn't call him all the ex-WWE guys that we could get a hold of.
I mean, if you look at his time in All Japan, like he's had a match, at least a match with Keiji Muto, and a match with Satoshi Kojima. he and D'Lo Brown competed in the tag team league. He teamed up with Rico in All Japan. This is amazing. I didn't know all this bit.
Yeah, it was inexplicable periods where XWE guys would go over. As I said, Bart Gunn would have victories over... who was it in All Japan? Was it Misawa? Why am I asking you? You're not a pure expert. I'm just thinking out loud. But yeah, my point is these people would come over and they'd go, oh, great, an XWE guy, you must be good. So, yeah, was it Bull Buchanan? Who else is that? Chuck Palumbo was there at one point. Just incredible was. God.
Wow.
And Jamal, that's where he got good and turned into Umaga. Yeah, it's crazy. I haven't seen any of the matches, but I remember seeing the photos and be like, to us, it's like, wait, it's the mid-card. It's not even the good mid-card. He hasn't even got his vest. But over there, it's like, wow, respect. He could do a leg drop off the top rope.
They liked him so much, he and D'Lo Brown became the GHC Tag Team Champions at one point.
Here we go. Here's an example. During the Real World Tag League in 2004, Buchanan and D'Lo Brown went to a 30-minute time limit draw with Osumu, Nishimura, and Keiji Muto. Two little-known wrestlers.
We've got to put... All Japan Buchanan in the best if he's doing 30 minute broadways with Muto.
Absolutely,
he's got to be in the best, isn't he? He can't not be.
Yes, and he won the All Asian Tag Team titles with Rico.
What a guy. The last one is kind of like a hodgepodge of independent circuit Buchanan, where he was just called Buchanan. He became GCW Tag Champ along with AJ Steele. He teamed with the Grappler very briefly. It's just kind of like a bit of a hit and miss run. He became the GCW heavyweight champion at one point, beating Johnny Swigger. So there's some belts to his name in GCW, but I still think that it's not as strong as his run in All Japan. This is the best.
Some tiny indie. Yeah, it's not quite on the level as beating Kaiji Muto. Yeah, it's nearly there. It's just not quite.
You won't hear Bruce Pritchard doing a podcast about Bull Buchanan.
There's a very good reason for that. As much as I love the real deal, AJ Steele, no. Now, I've not seen any of his work, so I can't comment.
We'll put it in all right.
Yeah, I'm sure it was all right. I'm sure that's not the reason why Great Championship Wrestling went out of business in 2014.
There we go. That is, whoever was it that wanted that, you're welcome. That is your tiered list of all of Bull Buchanan's gimmicks. You're very welcome.
I hope it was worth it.
Oh, it wasn't.
What are we talking about? Oh, yeah, there we go. Bull Buchanan and Bossman. We get clips of them double teaming and beating up Kane on Raw. Bloody hell, they get a bit of a push, aren't they?
They love Buchanan.
Yeah. Crowd chatting for head cheese. Even the guy with the enormous Decepticon sign near the front. He must love the head cheese masters. And that's a bad reference that I'll get a tweet going, I liked it, Matthew, but please don't do it again. And Lawler, as he's talking about Bossman and Bull, he accidentally says, yeah, they're really good at serving people. And Carl goes, what do you mean? Oh, no, nothing. Hey, look at that great match. So, to believe that these are not random attacks on people, but they're actually being paid or somehow being told to do it by people. And the mystery of Bull Buchanan and Bossman will continue until next week.
That's a long story for this particular time period.
It is. No Bull here. Bull gets a clothesline off the top to no pop. I swear, only we like that. Nice move. We finally get news and update about what Scotty Duhati said about his partner. Sexay is out with a knee injury. Thanks for taking 10 minutes to tell us that, Cole. Match goes on for a while and we get a funny variation of the flying nothing off the top with Steve Blackman extending his leg like a dog about to urinate. And that takes out Bossman. However, he's able to come back from the pissing dog to deliver a Bossman slam of snow. And Bull Buchanan, that's what it's called. Yeah, they have to look it up. And Bull Buchanan flies off the top with a giant leg drop to end it clean. But Blackman uses his kung fu to kick him away as if they're Bradshaw at the airport and get some of his heat back. Well, maybe not for Blackman, but you know what I mean. Any thoughts here, Tom?
I like the bit where we did the Buchanan tier list. This match was very there. This match will forever be described as a match that happened on SmackDown.
Absolutely. Eddie and China arrive at the arena in a low rider. What a silly gimmick. That'll never last. Oh, it's not China. It's Mama Cedar. And we'll find out more after these words from the boot of the week. And it is to catch everybody up from last Monday. China DDTing Jericho to help Eddie win the European title. The Raw after Mania, so a nice one-day reign there for Jericho. At Lugs, there for dinner. And we get more details on this because it's going to segue into the next segment. But I've got to wonder, does it count as a screw job if China and Jericho didn't get along anyway?
Yeah, that's it. Like, I don't think it does because they were frenemies as it was. But I guess because, like, China had started to become, like, majorly pally with Jericho, the guard was somewhat down, but even so, it kind of goes against the idea, like the whole thing of if it was a setup all along, why are you fighting? Like, why? Because it was only at WrestleMania this past Sunday that China was beating Eddie Guerrero up.
Lovely reaction for the pair of them, as this idea is already over. Eddie is handing out roses to Mama Cedar on the way to the ring, and he asked to know why she did what she did. And she just admits the entire world to hear she just couldn't resist his Latino heat. And Eddie reacts by getting on his hands and knees, kissing her feet, and then going up and kissing her knees, and pan up, look at China. And China tries talking, but notices Eddie is hanging onto her leg. That's to get off before
he's
talking.
So good.
And I suddenly understand how China is such a big lesbian icon after rewatching segments like this. She's covered in leather. She's got people kissing her feet. She's being all dominant. It's like, oh, right. Okay,
get it now.
Now I get it. Now I get it, Mama Cedar. And China also points out that she had to screw Jericho. You're a real man, Eddie. not like that little man Jericho, and I do mean little. And this is enough for Jericho to come out, attack Eddie, a manager powerbomb before Eddie escapes, and there's boos from the crowd, and it's unsure if it's for Eddie or Jericho, because damn, this is already cool to watch. This is already such a great gimmick. Eddie's there talking about, he lists off famous Europeans like Columbus and whatever, I can't remember the rest because I wouldn't pay attention. We never, and now I had my name, Eddie.
And now, like, it's his first Eddie. Name.
Michelangelo, Donatello, Eddie. It's this off the Turtles there.
How did China know how big Jericho's winkle was if they were just mates or frenemies?
I think it's just a dig. But
moving
away from Jericho's tiny penis, what did you think of this gimmick, Tom?
Gosh, amazing. It's weird to hear the music, because the music they came out to was his Latino Heat music, but pre-vocals. So that was a bit unusual to hear that. I like little bits like that in wrestling history when we watch these shows and you can kind of hear the making of a theme song. And when we get those songs that aren't quite the finished article, and it's obviously went away and went, we need to add a little something to this. So they added the Latino Heat vocals to it. But it's like an instrumental track of Latino Heat that we get, which I like. I also like, in terms of like embryonic things.
Oh, I've not heard that in ages.
Yeah, we've done one in a while, have we? I'm sure if you watch this back, Jericho hits the Judas effect on Eddie Guerrero.
What?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a back fist, but it looks like it would eventually become the Judas effect. 20 years early. Jericho hits a Judas effect on Eddie Guerrero. Go back and watch it and you can see it. Eddie Guerrero hitting, Jericho getting that Judas effect in on Eddie.
I was too distracted by Mamacita.
But no, they were great here. Like, Eddie and China. Yeah. And this is just the beginning of their partnership. And it's just going to be something that just steals the show. It's one of those amazing moments where a bad guy is so good that the crowd, they turn them. You can't deny it. It's just organic. You can't deny it. And Eddie Guerrero becomes one of the most beloved baby faces for a while. And it's so cool to see.
Yeah, and speaking of that exact same situation, here's Kurt Angle, the idiot.
Yes.
And he's trying to recruit S.A. Rios as a tag partner. S.A. can't speak English, so Angle tries explaining to S.A. tonight they can win the tag team titles, and then S.A. can sell one of his titles to feed his family. Lita then translates, and he says something in Spanish and walks off. And Kurt's like, is that a no?
Oh, God.
Sorry, for some reason it's really tickled by the idea of like, oh good, now I can sell this to people. Anyway, DX show up and they're mad. Triple H wonders how they got booked for an autograph session that just happened to overlap with the first bit of SmackDown. Maybe it was Bill Buchanan who did it. Oh no, wait, it was the McMahons, who were able to then book their revenge for the main event tonight. Vince tells them all to relax and tells them to try the carrot.
I love how anti-authority Triple H and DX are. Like, their whole shtick is they are anti-establishment. And it's like, hey, we'll do what we want. Da, 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 da. And here's Triple H coming and going, you sent us to a contract sign. You sent us to an autograph signing that took ages. Like, you DX, just walk out. Why do we had to wait ages to cross the road because the light was on red? Like, you Muppets, what happened? Where's the edge gone? In no, not RC Edge, but where's the whole idea of Triple H coming in and being mad at Vince for overrunning autograph signing? Shut up, mate. You're anti-authority. You could have just thrown the table across the room and walked out, but you didn't.
But the fans. Plus, you can tell Triple H has written this.
The fans that we don't care about because we're bad guys.
You can tell Triple H wrote this. It's like, what can be a logical reason for missing the first bit of it? Oh, well, how about an autograph session where there were so many fans that it overran?
Hey, we're so over as bad guys. Like, it's the fans just can't get enough of us. The whole idea of if you have to tell people you're over as bad guys, you're not over as bad guys.
Mm. No, but I like it because, in theory, all it would take with the combined efforts of DX and the corporation, oh, sorry, don't call them that, Vince's crew, to go, yeah, you know what, let's just kill The Rock, and it'll be over. So there's got to be some reason for them to not always get along or something get in the way of things.
Yeah, I suppose.
If it's just go, you know what, I am the higher power, remember? And an awkward bit, let's see if you notice this, Tom. Steph then appears to do the next segment, but we go to break immediately afterwards, and when we return, she repeats the dialogue at the start of it again.
Yeah, she just gave it another run out. It's a bit like how I thought, it's a bit like when a TV show goes to break, and then when it comes back, it kind of sums up a bit of what's been happening in the first sentence. Like Family Guy does it a lot, where they'll go, Peter, I can't believe that we've gone back in time! Like, after the break.
Yeah.
Peter, I can't believe our dog, Brian Griffin, is dead! Like, they'll have to do a little something just in case people have hopped around. So is this Stephanie just going, Peter, my husband's not very happy!
Yeah, and this was definitely getting used to doing exposition.
Yeah.
Which, people are still commenting, because I think I said it in the OSW review, like, Stephanie only speaks in exposition. And I still get people tell me about it. Because, yeah, she show up and goes, like, hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm all right. How you doing? Okay. Oh, here's Steph. Hello. On this week's episode of Raw, the longest running sport entertainment thing in ever to live, 2 weeks away from, can't say the date, but 2 weeks away from the certain page. It's like, what are you talking about? Why are you talking like a normal human being?
She's like an Alexa.
Yes.
Good morning.
God, that's exactly what she is.
It is 19 degrees today in Connecticut. She speaks in exposition. I like that. Do you want another?
Hartford, Connecticut is where Titan Towers exist. Titan Towers was almost seized by the FBI.
My dad is a hero.
In early 1994. Anyway, Steph plays Sweet and Innocent to Vince to get him to get X-Pac and Road Dogg to take their place tonight to face The Rock. And she's like, please, Daddy, please. And Vince's like, no, okay, hon, just this once. And I think it's a nice thing, because like, people act differently with different people. Because obviously in the ring, Vince McMahon's like, I'm the best, I'm this, I've got grapefruits. And then Steph's obviously like she bitch from hell, but when it's together, it's like, come on, Dad. Oh, okay, huh?
Yeah,
my
it's
sweet
true.
Daughter.
It's like a proper father-son relationship. Oh,
that was really good. Yeah,
it's exactly as it should be. I like it. An iconic photo of Stephanie McMahon, I think, was taken on this day. This is a really random, useless fact that when I watched this segment, I realized it.
Well, she's got the Macho Man shirt on.
Oh Christ! No, there's only like one or two photos like of like promo shots of Stephanie McMahon with the WWF Women's Championship, and one of them I think was taken on this day because she's wearing the same outfit that she wears in that picture. Random useless fact. I don't know what you do with it. Do what you will with it. But I just went, her hair's the same. She's wearing the same outfit. That's probably the day they took that picture. Just there you go. You're welcome.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah, that's a nice look there.
Strong look.
I thought I'm going to say, oh, this is an iconic photo. I'm like, hey, look, she needed the money.
Oh, God.
And this segues into the next match, which is the great Malenko himself, Dino, showing up with his light heavyweight title that I forgot he had to wrestle Taka Michinoku. Whoa, some hot New Japan 94 action here for the crowd. Anyway, it's a pretty sweet 5-minute match. It's the wrong time to be doing it. They do keep the action hot for those 5 minutes in the crowd. Eventually, like, you can even politely applaud at some point, which is very crazy to see a WWF crowd in 2000 doing. Dean busts out his glorious top rope gut drop that he used to love doing to Rey Mysterio Jr., possibly because he was the easiest guy to do it in that company, to put away the first ever WWF light heavyweight champion from 97. What do you think of this little match here, Tom?
Great. Really good match. How would this have been treated in 2020? This would have been like, this would have been applauded in 2020. But because this is not the time for wrestling and work rate, it's just kind of a match that's thrown out there just to keep the crowd ticking over, it really feels like. But it was great. Like, the light heavyweight division, sorely underappreciated in WWF. And that will forever be the case. Because every so often, you'd have someone like Dean or Scotty Too Hotty, when they were the champion, bust out some belters. And this was a fine example of it.
Yeah, and I do remember it being an argument for WWF. There were many people who were strongly, strongly for WCW and weren't all on the WWF bandwagon. And one of the things was, you can say that we misused talent all you like, but you bastards retired Dean Malenko. It always come up as like, yeah, never forget, WWF ruin Dean Malenko.
They really did. They really did. Yeah.
Someone who isn't getting ruined is Big Show, who is backstage dancing. Shane McMahon watches him in a Don't Think About It Too Much segment. Shane McMahon is watching Big Show dancing on Raw and shaking his derriere, his caboose, if you will, and then putting Grandmaster Sexay through a table backstage after he laughed at his dancing. Oh, so that's a storyline reason.
That's all
I'm
you need.
Glad we got on the same page there. Yeah, Big Show splashed him through a table and he's out with an ankle injury. It's like, wait, what? Oh, also his guts exploded, but it's mostly his ankle. And we're teased with that as backstage, Kurt Angle is trying to fend off Mae Young, who desperately wants to be his tag partner tonight, but Haga Holly walks past and he's like, team up with you against Edge and Christian. Oh, go on then. And Kurt Angle is very happy to be with the guy who did a film with the guy who played Hellboy.
It was crazy.
But what about the punchline, Mae Young?
Well, there you go. Mae Young's old. Do you get it? That's why it's funny.
Wait, here we go. Every time Mae Young should say something, the last thing on the thing, someone should just walk in with a flute whistle. Wah, 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 wah.
And then I want Vince on commentary, like Raw from 94, going, ha 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 ha. Do you get it? She's old. Unbelievable.
It's great you say, remember the Alamo? And she goes, of course I do. I was there.
It's funny because she's old. That's the joke.
When she was still wrestling, the Dead Sea was just sick.
Subtle humor.
Anyway. She's dead now. The Godfather comes to the ring.
Press F for Mae Young, Godfather.
The Godfather, that's how old she is. She's dead. The Godfather comes to the ring. And before the match starts, we get the PG rated, the show is for kids, please buy the action figure section, where the Godfather politely asks if there's any pimps who can light a fatty for him and shows off his hose. And his opponent tonight is the Big Show. But he's dressed up as the Big Pimp.
This is amazing.
And he gets the crowd to raise the roof, ho, raise the roof, ho, and they do. This is such a sing-along crowd. So they're the blame good. For these segues. It then takes a few seconds to remove all of his accessories, his pimp hat, his pimp chains, his pimp sticks. Godfather gets a bit impatient and attacks him from behind. And it took a week for Big Show to go from headlining the biggest show of the year to a comedy gimmick, but it's Big Show, so it's already an improvement reaction-wise for him. And he's definitely enjoying the gimmick because he delivers a drop kick and then follows it up with a second rope elbow drop. If Big Pimp had headlined WrestleMania 2000, I tell you, Tom, he'd have been out second.
I kind of wish that Pimp had stuck around a bit longer.
This is clearly, we're going to do a tier list for Big Show. It's all these 2000 gimmicks.
We should actually, shouldn't we?
If Big Show dressed up as Bull Buchanan.
Spoiler.
Big Bull.
Spoiler, if we are going to do this gimmick tier list, spoiler, Shonan the Barbarian is the best.
I was going to say that has to be, just for the pun alone. Anyway, he takes the hoe train, but a hoe distracts the Godfather for some reason. So Show breaks a pimp stick over him to win. It's not a very good pimp stick if it breaks with one hit, I've got to tell you. Must be one of those Aldi pimp sticks. It turns out the hoe was a secret agent hoe. And she gets... I've seen that film. And she gets in the ring to play tonsil hockey with the Big Pimp, which I guess makes her the Big Hoe. And he drapes her over her shoulders. Show is over. He's winning matches and he's got great big tits.
Do you want a really fun story about this match?
You know I do.
Oh, right. Okay, so Big Show did an interview with Pro Wrestling Stories a little while ago. And I'm going to sort of read the story from Big Show's perspective. Vince informed me that I would be impersonating the Godfather. This, of course, sounded like great fun until Vince explained that I'd have to kiss one of the hoes. I was totally cool with the idea of wearing gold chains, dancing and playing up the role, but the problem was with me kissing another woman on a night that Bess, my wife, was backstage. I expressed my fear to Vince. Yes, I said fear. It doesn't matter how big I am, telling Bess
that I had to kiss another woman wasn't something I was looking forward to. So I asked Vince to do it for me. Being the confident leader that he is, Vince looked me straight in the eye without hesitation and said, "No problem." He seemed so confident. I knew this was something I had to see. He then watches as Vince McMahon goes over to his wife. They have a brief conversation. And then Vince comes back and says, "Yeah, all fine. She said yes. She said it's okay." Big Show's like, "Well, how did you get away with that?" And Vince said, "We're putting Bess in the show. She's going to play the hoe that you kiss." So Big Show was concerned about kissing another woman on the night that his wife was at the show. So Vince just went, "All right, the solution's easy. Your wife's going to be the one that you kiss." So the hoe was Big Show's real life wife, Bess.
What?
Good, innit?
He married a hoe. Show.
Big Show. You know
never. They're not like that. It's an illusion.
You can't make a hoe a housewife. Did we learn nothing from rap music?
Pretty woman walking down the street. Oh, that's a great story because it shows like Big Show would never have gone up to his wife and gone, "Look, can you play a hoe?"
No.
But Vince McMahon's like, "The solution is easy. Your wife is the hoe.
Do you want to be a hoe?
That's his real wife."
Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
I'm not being funny, but like they get these women out every week and you can tell which ones are professional hoes. And I thought she was.
Professionals.
Yeah, thank you. That is the technical term. On their LinkedIn profile. But this woman was stacked. I'm just saying. Whatever the technical term is. So I just thought, oh, secret agent ho. She's a real ho.
Secret agent ho. Do you want to know another
007 DD. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever, does it?
No, 00D. No, that'd be weird. They'd be hanging down.
Yeah, wait a minute. What?
That another lovely Big Show story, and this is one that really makes me smile.
Oh, yeah.
Watch back older ones, because he's very devoted to Bess. He's very devoted to his wife, and in sort of mid-2000s, I think he still does it now. To be fair, when you watch him walk down to the ring, you will always see the Big Show rub both his wrists. So he'll rub the left wrist and then rub the right wrist as he's walking to the ring. That is a secret message for Bess, saying "I love you." So when she's watching on TV, when he does that, that's her saying to his wife, "I love you."
After seeing her tonight, I can see why Big Show will be shaking his wrist on TV. I'm sorry to take that down. That is actually a lovely, lovely,
lovely
thing to say.
Isn't it lovely?
Oh,
it's nice.
I was going to say, nice every time he does the choke slam, he's going, "Love you, Beth."
I like it's little stuff like that, little nudges like that that I always like. We haven't done graded using the desk for a while at Cultaholic. Whenever I do graded, I used to be in front of a virtual desk. Spoiler, it's a virtual desk! But obviously, because we're doing it from home, that hasn't happened. But there's a little hidden message on the desk that I use. So when the desk was designed for me, I gave them a whole list of things I wanted on there, including a hidden message for Alex, my good lady, which is hidden on the desk. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but there is a hidden message on the desk, which is just for me and Alex, which she knows about, and it's on there. So any chance you get to do something subtle for somebody you love, always do it. It's nice.
That is nice.
There you go. And there's a picture of Kenny Everett, and I like him. And Sonic the Hedgehog and Mickey the Dragon.
Yeah, what does that picture of Sonic the Hedgehog mean, Matthew, that you have? It means I love Sonic.
It means I love Sonic.
I know wherever I am, he's watching me.
I do something with my wrists.
And on
think
that lovely
Sonic
message. And we're clearly not running late on material. So here's a 1998 advert with a guy's butt to plug WF.com. Completely ruined the good times we're just having. Still don't know why they're being shown. Just, anyway, inexplicable. Almost as inexplicable as Kurt Angle and Hardcoreholic team up take on Edge and Christian. And Edge has that awful, everyone has a little Edge in them shirt.
Oh, God.
Which I think only Val Venus's sister bought.
Oh,
And I like this match, not because of the fine action, but because I remember the last time the Hollies were feuding with Edge and Christian a few months ago, Hardcore Holly took the time to go on commentary and rag on them both. And he said a line that I still remember months later. He said, "Look at Christian, he's so skinny. If you put a quarter on his head, he'd look like a nail."
Oh, that's a hell of a line, that is. A hell of a line.
I like that line. Very decent action and a look at the future greatness of Angle versus Edge. Jay Lawler getting another good line saying, "If John Wayne was alive, he'd be president of the Kurt Angle fan club." Yeah, he was a daft racist as well. Solid tag match ending with the super duper plex from Edge and Christian that I'm surprised they're still using. They managed to not kill each other doing the move, so that's nice. And Kurt Angle is not happy with the loss, but says it's only a loss for Holly because he got pinned and not Kurt Angle. And he tells Hardcore Holly, "I should have picked Mae Young instead of you," which is enough for Hardcore to drop him with the best dropkick in the business and then the Falcon Arrow.
Nice.
What do you think, Tom?
All right, fun little match this. Liked it. I don't know whether we want a Hardcore Holly face turn or not. I think it's just that Hardcore Holly just can't be trusted.
Yeah. Mae Young would have been all right, though.
Mae Young,
you know what? Mae Young and Angle
has
tag champs for a bit.
Much better partner for Angle.
Yeah. So, the main event is... well, what is it? Is it The Rock versus Vince and Shane? No, it is, in fact, The Rock versus X-Pac and Road Dogg. But, oh, stop me if you heard this one before. Here's Shane McMahon to be the special guest ring announcer. As Lola says, well, it can't be any worse than Tony Chimmel. Oh, and Triple H is the guest referee. Well, I think we know how this is going to play out. Rock is still The Rock, so he no-sells everything to begin. But Triple H counts slowly, so even he has to sell. And for the notes, I've just typed here, blah, blah, blah. that isn't me being a negative Nancy, but it's like, we're not going to run down this, isn't it? It's like, it's the first time it's ever happened. It's good, it's fine, but I think if you've watched wrestling for a while, you know what. Rock is just having to fight the odds and overcome everything. And everything is not going his way until The Rock is able to bump X-Pac off the apron and onto Shane in a wacky bump. Rock turns around, Rock bottoms Triple H. Earl Hebner runs down, and the crowd's like, ah, oh, Earl's going to actually pin this and it's going to count. Vince pulls him out, a nice swerve there, crowd going, no. So Rock has enough, eyes up Vince, realizes that Triple H is down, so Shane shows X-Pac. So chases Vince up the ramp as Vince realizes he's by himself, holds off the X and the crew by saying, look, if you come near me, I'll hit him with a chair. Then hits him with a chair anyway to end the show with a great visual that Tom will probably use as the teaser image for this episode, with Rock standing over Vince with the chair and looking all defiant.
That's a great bit. It's just like holding Vince hostage, although it will be a picture of the big pimp. But regardless of that, it's a nice image anyway, like The Rock, who's just at his wit's end with these people, just clatters Vince with the chair.
That would have been it. Remember, the roles have been reversed in Big Show's in this handicap match, and he's holding them off, saying, "No, if you hit me, I'll hit Vince McMahon with my big pimp stick.
I'll hit Vince McMahon with my wife. Your wife in the show, she's a steel chair."
She's like those giant books in No Mercy, the N64.
Yes. In fact, if you go to the crowd enough, you do pull out Beth's show. And you can use her as a weapon.
Well, it's the big book.
Yeah, very by the numbers main event. Just like DX just being an arse to The Rock, and The Rock just finally having enough. So we crack on. We have Backlash on the way, and where all sins will be absolved.
All right, Tom. What was something that you remembered from this week's episode?
Oh, I remember the big pimp. Oh, raise the roof. Oh, raise the roof. It was so good. Big Show.
And they do it. They do it as well. They're like, yeah, let's raise the roof.
They just immediately, they're in there. They're in there with him. Big Show, just so good in that particular role. And just, he's so, like, it's gutting that he was sort of pushed so quickly. Because he's such a funny guy. And had he had just an extra year just to be off screen and just work on all the other things, we would have just seen this monster dominate wrestling for decades. But I just feel like they rushed him and they never got the momentum with him, ever.
And it's a shame. Like, it's like now the way that in 2020, the way they use the Big Show now is actually pretty good in the sense that he's now like this legend who is an obstacle for somebody to beat. And it's a big deal when that happens. But at this point, he was on telly every week and it didn't feel special. And the Big Pimp was just an example of just actually this guy. Not only is he a giant, but he's really, really funny and he's really good and he's just up for stuff. I loved him here. What did you remember?
To what you said, yeah, I agree. They never... Bischoff says many times in 83 weeks that they never got the Big Show that they wanted. They wanted this second Andre, and the business had changed. He wasn't very good to begin with. Obviously, he'd get great. And obviously, he's been a hell of a wrestler, had a hell of a career over the years, but he was never that Andre that they wanted, that special thing. But as you said, I think he's did a lot with what he had. And the fact that he went from being... God, this guy's in the main event of WrestleMania 2000 to yay, Big Pimp, you know, week is speaks volumes about him. Thing that I remembered, it has to be, why, Mamacita, why did you turn on Jericho? I couldn't resist your Latino heat. Oh, you know, that.
Great line.
That's the thing I remember about this period of Eddie. Just like, I think I asked on Twitter a while ago, and someone responded, thankfully. I said, look, some people would look at this depiction of Eddie Guerrero and go, wow, it's the most stereotypical, like, not a good image for Mexican people, image you'd see. Like, hey, I'm so sleazy and I love you. I'm going to hit on you even though you don't want me to. And I go, oof, it's a bit rough, isn't it? Is that a stereotype? But I think this is the reason why so many people liked it. He hit on someone and she's like, you know what? Yeah. Yeah, you are hot. I do like your Latino heat. So it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, the payoff was that he was actually, he was desirable. That was the payoff.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Exactly. The payoff was he was hot. So, yeah, it's got to be Latino heat. What was something that you forgot about the show?
I forgot what a banger Benoit and Rikishi was as an opening match. It feels like a lifetime ago at this point, but I forgot how great their chemistry was. And just that example of the Intercontinental Championship being like the workhorse championship. Then I always look to sort of the day, like the IC Championship as being that, even though it's had a bit of a potted history as of late. Like, the idea that is the belt that every week gets defended on TV and every week they're grafting for. And Benoit and Rikishi had a really good match. I also forgot that Lillian Garcia sang Is This the Way to Amarillo?
Yeah, the bit I forgot was that entire Vince McMahon bit. Going, well, why did you... Sorry, fans, why did you think that he was the champion? Oh, counted three. San Jose... San Pellegrino, wherever I'm at. No.
You and your fucking sparkling water.
Boo. No, it's true. If you're going to be dumb and think that Rock's the champion because Earl Hebner counted three in a match that wasn't even a match, then you're stupid. It would have worked in WCW. Well, go to WCW then. Go celebrate Sid Vicious versus Ron Harris or whatever's happening right now. I don't care. All right, then we will. And they all left and it was amazing. We went, no, come back. I'm sorry. The Rock's going to be on later. And they go, oh, we like him. And they stayed. What a moment.
That's exactly how it went. That's exactly true. So that was SmackDown this week. Thank you very much to Matthew Gregg for your company, your songs this week. It's been a treat.
You can tell I like you, Tom, because I watched the proper episode this week.
Thanks, mate.
I wouldn't do that for anybody else.
No, it's appreciated. Until next time, you've already watched next week's episode, so you're sorted. Till next time, he is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. We will see you definitely next week. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Hey,
boom, boom.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Oh, Gino, Tess, you've ruined it again.
Come on, Eileen, who are you?
Come on, Eileen, who are you? Love you, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.